Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm back with my former teammate and current colleague, Adrian Conway. Adrian is a member of the CrossFit L1 staff, head coach at Wasatch CrossFit in Layton, Utah, as well as one of the head coaches at Brute. Adrian is the main coach that all of our athletes check in with on a weekly basis. On this show, we talk a lot about their team that is gearing up for the games this year, what they've learned working together for the past 6 to 9 months, as well as the new relationship with their coach, Nick Fowler. We finish up by talking about what he's learned through all of the thousands of hours of teaching seminars, coaching athletes in person and online. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm back for the second time or third time with my former teammate and colleague, Adrian Conway. Adrian, you got the games coming up. You got a lot on your plate, new baby. Thank you for making some time to do this with me today, man.
Love to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah. So I want to start out with this. You guys have a team that can actually dethrone the mayhem, and I'm very excited about that. Let's back up about 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, however long ago before you guys decided to form the team. All of you had been competing as individuals in the past, and you had been on a team with me. Most of the people had been on a team before, but at the time everybody was competing as an individual. So what were the conversations like that convinced everyone to join this team?
Gosh. The conversations were all over the place, to be honest. At first, it was more, you know, specifically for me, it was like, hey, I'm assessing where I'm going to be at this year in regards to professionally as a coach, managing the gym with Brute, and then also Ashley and I had planned to have a baby, and clearly that worked out. So I knew that I just didn't want my full focus on being an individual athlete. Mm-hmm. So once I made that decision, I clearly approached, you know, several other people. Brennan had been coming up here. Jake Hutton had been coming up here. We were training with Chase Haywood, Michaela, Tiff. Mitch had been training with me for the last year and a half, just kind of byproduct of our relationship nonstop, right? So he was just, anytime I'd show up at the gym, he showed up at the gym. Right. So we had these discussions about like potentially putting together a team, and I don't think anyone was fully committed until sometime around the fall, right? So before that, it was just kind of like we had these whispers of it, and then I got Michaela and Tiff and Chase to be on a team with me. We went to Hawaii and competed, which was awesome, and at the VA games. Mm-hmm. And for Tiff and Michaela, it was like really some first exposure to high level competition on a team at all. So for them, that was new, right? And I think they liked it. We won the competition, so clearly it was good. It worked out in our favor. But then, you know, shortly after that, as the season starts to approach and like everybody starts to kind of get more in game mode to train, I think it was a little harder. Like Michaela was our first one to track down, I think. And that conversation more so looked like, hey, like you were really close to qualifying as an individual last year. And clearly there was a heartbreaking moment where she was literally stepping onto the podium and they took her down to tell her the judgment call was reversed and that opportunity was going to be taken from her that year. And so she was so hungry that I think that was one of our biggest concerns of the core group that were ready to go team was like, I don't know if she'll completely want to be all in. But you know, I think her knowing the potential that the team could have. And at that point, like Brennan was like, yeah, man, I'm in. Let's go team. Mandy was like, hey, let's do this. Tiff was even all in at the point to the where, like, even when we heard that there was going to be a master's category from 35 to 40, which mm-hmm. literally, if she wanted to, she could train to go win that thing.
Right.
She was still like, I'd rather go team. Let's do this. So, you know, it kind of left us in the pool with Michaela and then this third guy, right? And the third guy situation looked like, hey, Chase had been training really hard all year. He had been training with us. But he's at this point in life where, I mean, he's got four kids that are almost grown, right? Like his weekends look like he's all over the place. Right. He's running a business. He's at this place in life where I personally couldn't even ask myself to put forth training or like make the sacrifices necessary to like be with a team, to create the camaraderie and the teamwork necessary to like make it happen. So for Chase, I think it was a time in life, and he was always willing to be there for us. He has helped us through the off season, through the in season, like with advice, has a ton of experience on a team. And then Mitch is here, and basically Jake was a part of the equation for a while too, but Jake took other opportunities, and now he's been moving all around, kind of from Arizona, Southern Utah, and we kind of knew that was inevitable too. We knew the opportunities that were going to wait for him, and it was like, hey man, I get it. Like, we're all at the time of life where you got to kind of make those kind of difficult decisions. You can't just play, you know, all your life. So that was hard for him. Because I think he really wanted to like be on a team with us. Like, it was one of those things where, and Jake jokingly says like, oh man, CrossFit ain't that fun. Like, I don't even like it, but like, it would have been awesome to be able to throw down with him, through a season. And then Mitch is here, and he's shown ridiculous progress over the last year. And there's been no in particular way where I've tried to dial in his programming so that it looks a certain way. It's just more like he shows up and we do what I write up on the whiteboard, right? And a lot of the days, that's us taking it from some of the brute work that we can throw in. And a lot of us, it's just us, you know, shooting ideas off the whiteboard and seeing what we want to do, seeing what we need to do. And I really had hopes for him to qualify this year as an individual to the regional. And I think that he did a lot of learning through the open, but he was definitely disappointed. And so with that, I almost noticed a little bit of a change in his training after the open. Because there was a bit of uncertainty because he signed up under our team, though, right? So we had this thing where before Chase had decided that he wasn't going to throw down with us, that it was like, okay, so who do we go with here? Like, what's the decision that we're going to make? And me asking Mitch, like, hey, man, do you want to be on the team? Like, is this something that you would want to do? And clearly he was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, he's all in. So he's all for this. And then it was about addressing the rest of the team. And it was almost a no-brainer as we started to get together team training-wise that he was going to make a great fit and be able to carry the load that we were going to need to ask of him. And Michaela was in shortly before the open 100% because, you know, she saw the potential that everyone else had. So as the team sprinkled together, I know this is a long way around to answer your question, but everybody was very conclusive with their decision to want to be on the Wasatch Brutes because it was like, we see the potential. We love to train together. We're training together already. Let's put this year forth to come together as a unit of six and see what we can do.
Right. I mean, it seems like a very similar situation to what we had where most, if not all of us, could go and compete for a spot at the games, or we could come together and try to win the games.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I remember the conversation that I had with Tommy like leading into that situation, right? It was like, hey man, you could probably go to the CrossFit Games as an individual. And this is back at what, 2012 season. And I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Like, that's what I want to do. He's like, or you could go win it with us.
Yep.
You know? And if you show up at the games and you're just a guy and you get 25th, like, who's going to remember you? Nobody. That's true. Nobody remembers that guy. Yeah, okay, I'm in. Let's go. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things. So we all got that opportunity this year, and we look forward to it.
So I remember I was down at Wadapalooza watching you guys, and I remember going into that thinking the girls are just going to destroy everyone. And I personally think this is the most talented group of females that's ever been on a team together. But they didn't do terribly, but they struggled with a lot of things that as individuals, they don't struggle with. Mm-hmm. So, and on the guys' side, you guys learned a lot as well. So what did both groups learn at that event?
It was humbling. You know, first off, I mean, for the women, it was a battle. It was a grind. Like, they really struggled through that experience. I mean, immediately coming back off that trip, like, just quickly, they were not sure about this whole thing anymore,
right?
Like, it literally created a lot of doubt for them.
And what was the biggest thing that you think got in their way?
Lack of teamwork. You know, to be very blunt, like, specifically understanding the difference in workout formats, right? Like, this is not an individual pursuit, it's very different. So the way that you got to attack a workout is that you have to understand, one, how important transitions are, and two, the energy that you got to put into each specific kind of event. And they didn't have that. And specifically, to be honest, I don't want to sound like the bad guy here, but I didn't want to plan for it. You know what I mean? Like, you have to understand that, like, there's a time and a place for game planning and strategy. And if we didn't win Wadapalooza, there was nothing on the line at that trip, right? So it's like, let's just see how everybody does right now. And so the women, for an example, is like, one of the workouts is like all three of the women participating at once. Split up the work however you want. that's ultimately a 1-to-2 work to rest ratio, right? So you're fully recovered. So when it's your time to work, you almost have to go to complete failure before you hand off the baton, right? Or at risk of where the speed is then inhibiting the team's score. And so they were trying to pace workouts that they could not pace. Like, we couldn't afford to pace those workouts. And they started to understand that as the weekend went on, but then it's like you get this final push and it's too late, scoring-wise. You ran out of score. So I think that was one of the big ones. And then also it was just like a little bit of a reality check in where the sport is going, right? They look at some of those females and they're like, cool. Like, yeah, we competed with these girls. We beat some of these girls 2 years ago. Let's go out and take it this year. And the truth is, we hadn't really been training like individual athletes. All the teams that beat them were individual athletes put together on super teams, mm-hmm. right? That also lacked some communication skills and everything, but also they train 6 hours a day, right? The majority of them, or they prioritize everything around that. And at this time of the season for us, it was like, we got together and trained, but it was 90 minutes to 2 hours a day. And everybody went their separate ways and focused on their career. And so I think that they also just kind of saw like, this is kind of where the split happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do this anymore. Invest that kind of time in your fitness, and then also expect to beat the people that are investing the 6 hours a day, 5 hours a day in their fitness, right. and recovering the way that they need to recover. So I think that was a lot of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what about on the guy's side?
On the guy's side, that's Mitch Butte's first exposure in any kind of big competition, right? Mm-hmm. For me and Brennan, we wanted to go out, have a good time. I mean, you know, we're confident against any of those guys in a one-on-one matchup. We kind of understood what we were getting ourselves into. We didn't necessarily expect to go take first. Do we want to? Absolutely. But an example is we go out for this first event, which is Assault on Fran. They do 21-15-9, 135 on the barbell thruster pull-up, thruster chest to bar pull-up, and then you bike like 45 calories after or whatever to finish your round. And we don't really talk about strategy much. We're just gonna go out and do our thing. And right before we walk out, I'm like, hey, Mitch, what are you gonna do on this one? And he was like, I think I'm just gonna go unbroken. And I was like, literally, Brent and I look at each other and we're like laughing, right? And I was just like, hey, man, all right, cool. So why don't you just drop the bar one time? Just let's just drop it on 21, see how it goes. Just drop it. And I mean, for sure. I mean, my man was juiced up, came out smoking, cooking. He can move 135 like it's nothing. I mean, he's moving fast. I think he maybe, I don't know, he gets like 15, drops it, picks it up, does his thing, gets a chest of bars, 21, we're looking good. I'm like, okay, cool, here we go. Gets back to the barbell, 15, he has to drop it twice. So now we're watching this workout unfold in the order that we would prefer it not. I'd rather him drop it three times on 21, less right. on 15, speed up as he goes. Immediately after the workout, he was like, okay, like that was a mistake. Like something that I learned from. And for each of us, it was a similar way, right? Like we went out and I was the last one on the event. So it was kind of like we were anticipating getting time capped at that point. So I just tried to do what I could do at the end of the workout. Brennan paced it decently. But we all just realized like, okay, that we made a mistake on that first event. We set ourselves back pretty good. We were able to make up some great ground through the weekend on workouts that were simple and work capacity based, right? Mm-hmm. So we knew that the three of us could excel there, which was nice to see. Like we did really well on the run, swim, run event there. We did really well on the sprint event where they scored like several, like each of us sprinted a certain distance on the true form. Like those were two of our best finishes. And we realized that we were more limited in the skills, especially where they were in capacity. So it's like high volume handstand pushups, high volume ring muscle ups, where we either made bad decisions in our rotations or we made bad decisions in the order that we went in the workout to not put our best athlete to do the most work, if right. that makes sense. So we too learned great lessons. And I think it was one of those things that like, I came out of the weekend overall happy because everyone was pretty fired up about it, right? Like we went then into this situation where, dang, we could be a good team, but look at how easily we can blow it. You know what I'm saying? And right. it's like one of those things where I think it just happened at the perfect time. Like it's, you got time to fix the things that you need to fix and clean up the things that you need to clean up and learn the lessons that you need to learn. And then we were looking at going into the open, and my whole goal with the open was like, look, I want everyone to do these workouts one time and that's it. And let's just move on. Cause regionals is like, they don't got awards for the open for the team. So why try to win one, you know, other than you just need to take care of your placing. But yeah, I was happy with the way Wadapalooza shook out because if we would have won, I don't think that people would nearly have gone into the season as hungry as they should have been.
Right.
Yeah.
And then once y'all started doing team-style workouts, there might not have been that same sense of urgency.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then people saw too in each other, like, okay, so they really do excel at that movement, and like, mm-hmm. they really need work at that movement. So it created also this accountability with the team. Like, okay, I see that in that person, but they're holding it down right here. But oh, I'm going to need to either pick them up in that situation, or they really need to put in some work on that situation. And then it's like that open window of communication where everybody's being transparent. Hey, are you practicing your handstand pushups? Like, how's your shoulder doing? Are you actually overhead squatting? Like, when's the last time that you touched these ring muscle ups? Because remember, at Wodapalooza, this happened and it cost us.
Right.
So
around that time, most people were doing their own thing. A couple people were doing Brute, and you guys were, you know, coming together a little bit, but everybody was kind of on their own.
Yep.
And then, I don't know, you tell me, a month or more before the regional, you guys decided to bring on Nick Fowler, the director of strength and conditioning at Brute. What was that? What went into that decision? Why did y'all decide to do that?
My whole thought going into this year is I didn't want to micromanage anything, right? I didn't want to be the coach of the team. I love to lead. If I'm called to lead, I love to follow. If I'm called to follow. So I just wanted it to be what it is. Mm-hmm. And so I did not want to ever come into a situation where I was like, hey, listen, this is the program that we're doing. This is the way it looks like. This is the AM session. This is the PM session. If you're not here, you're axed. If you're not doing it, you're axed. If, you know, I wanted people to understand that, like, we got potential to pursue this journey. If you're doing the work you need to do and you're the best that you can be, like, we'll be all right. But a lot of the individuals on the team started to ask for more direction, like, specifically. So it was like, hey, Michaela would be like, you know, I know I need to work on this, but I really don't know how. Or like, I really do better when the work is set for me. And then Tiff might have shared the same thing. And then everyone's just kind of cohesively chirping in like, yeah, let's just get a plan together and let's just follow that. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'm completely fine with that. Just not my initial intent, because I thought you would enjoy that freedom of me mm-hmm. trusting and us trusting in each other that we're doing the work. So, because I don't doubt that about anybody on our team, right? Like, I know that everybody loves to grind, they love to train. But so we decided like, hey, instead of me doing this, which I already program for several athletes, right? And I'm talking programming all day and I'm coaching classes all day. If I can free myself up from those decisions, I can train with much more of a free mind and just mm-hmm. go into grinding the way that we need to grind. So brought on Nick Fowler. And immediately one of his goals was to just spend time with us. So to come and initial the first times we trained with them, he might have almost just been more like a fly on the wall, like mm-hmm. watching us communicate. He would write up the workouts, but there was very little like actual coaching going on. So yeah, that was the initial start of the decision though.
So what do you think has been the difference between having a coach versus a team captain? Right, where in the beginning it was more like a team captain was leading the whole group, and now you have a coach that's not a part of the core team leading.
That's a great question. You know, for me specifically, I guess being looked at as a team leader, like it allowed me to just throw down. You know what I mean? So it gave me freedom. I can personally say that, and I think that it gave the team as a whole trust that we were being guided in a direction that we all trusted was the best direction for the team. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just like, okay, I know I need to work on this, but am I really doing it the right way? Am I doing it the smart way? And because the communication was always very open, Nick's always like, hey, reach out. He got everybody's number. Everybody got his number. That it's like, Nick, this didn't go well for me today. Is this what you intended? And he could clearly communicate that back with him. Like, nah, I wanted that workout to be done in under 6 minutes. It shouldn't take you 8 minutes to do X. Let's work on fixing this. You know what I'm saying? So I think that the biggest thing was that it was freedom, because we could all get the programming, show up and do the work. There were specific sessions where we needed to do it together, and there were specific sessions where we could do it alone.
Right.
So, yeah.
I also think there's something to be said for having a figure of authority, right? Beforehand, it's just a peer leading right. peers. And so as much as they want to trust you and they do trust you, it's just not the same as having someone that's an authority figure telling you to do something.
Right.
So about a month before regionals, he starts with you guys. And I know there was a situation where he put you guys through a workout and some people started freaking out, and afterwards he had a conversation with you. Can you explain that experience?
Oh yeah, for sure. So this is like, I don't even know how long, you know, probably just a couple weeks before regionals. I think we only knew the workouts like a week before. So I think it might've been the week before that. Mm-hmm. Big Saturday training session, Usually we put in a couple hours or a few hours together at that time, but Nick was present. And when Nick was present, and just like you mentioned about the authority figure, when there's someone there watching you versus everybody doing it together, there's a higher intensity that's going to be achieved, right? So he comes in and he puts together this workout that's just like crazy. We end up running to open up. You run 2 miles with a weight vest on. You come back. You got to do like, I don't know, 75 worm squats, 75 toes to bar synchro, like 75 synchro clean and jerks, not with the worm, but with barbells. I think there might have been pull-ups in there. And then you go back through, right? Or clean and jerks were the turnaround, wow. But then you go back. So it was like back to the toes to bar, back on the worm for the squats, and then back with the weight vest on another 2 mile run. We're like, cool, okay, all right, let's do this. Hit the workout, we're going, we're making good time. We're communicating clearly. On the way back down, you know, we're pushing a tempo, man. We're trying to find ways to like really push our threshold, and people are starting to fall apart. Like grips fatiguing, people are starting to like the toes to bar aren't as smooth as they are on the first round. Like we're kicking the bar at different times, we're getting no repped. And we finally make our way back through the worm squats, and we start to take off towards the door. And everybody's just like a trot at this point. We're like falling forward, drools flying out of my mouth. And Brennan didn't know that we needed to put the weight vest back on, right? So he didn't know. He was just like clueless. But he's like running towards the door, and he says something about the weight vest.
And why do you think he didn't know? Is it what did he did Nick tell you guys beforehand that you had to put the waist vest back on, or why didn't he know?
I couldn't tell you why. Okay. I think it was he was tired,
right?
And hoped that he didn't right. have to put the weight vest on. Right. That might have been more what it was than anything. It was like this.
He can't make us.
Yeah, he was like, nah, man, nah, no way. But he said he's like running to the door. He's like, oh, wait, wait. And like I hear him. But I kind of like nod my head, and I'm tired. I'm not like yelling anything, right? And then he's like, the weight vest. So I hear him. And at this point, I'm like reaching for my weight vest, like grabbing it. And then he just like, are we putting the effing weight vest on? And everyone's just like I'm laughing as I'm like putting my weight vest on. He gets his weight vest on and starts running. We all start running. It all takes care of itself. That was just a hint, though, of like the frustration that he was feeling at the time, mm-hmm. right? And on my part, I needed to clearly find the energy to help. Just be like, yeah, put the weight vest on. Put my vest on right. and go. So we finish the run. We get back. And everybody's feeling some kind of way. We're all blown up. We're tired. We push each other on the pace of the run. People are cramping up. It was a hot day. One of the first real hot days here this summer. And Nick's just like, hey, man, can we get the team together? Like, can we chat for a minute? I'm like, yeah, let's chat. And then he had some words for us. And it was basically giving us clear characteristics or traits that he saw in our team during the struggle that we needed to hear from him directly on that day, right. in that moment, that we definitely wouldn't have had if we didn't have a coach present.
I think that's incredibly important. And we didn't even necessarily have that when we were training, because, you know, we only were able to work out with Rob ever so often. But I got to experience that with Michael Winchester at Jakarhu this year. And after every training session, he would break it down and he would give people direct feedback. And there was no, because again, he's that authority figure and not first and foremost my friend, he could be very direct and give me constructive criticism. And I didn't feel like he was picking on me. Yeah. And that's probably the biggest reason I think it's important to have an actual coach rather than just a team captain in general.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's a valuable thing that I think probably very few teams get to experience, mm-hmm. for the most part, especially higher level teams, I guess, right? Like a lot of the higher level teams, I think, just kind of run themselves, at least from my experience, or they tend to. And I mean, because it's an opportunity, like you said, like he can say some things that you necessarily wouldn't want to hear.
Right.
But you know it's important and you respect the person saying it.
So then you guys go to regionals. And you dominate, but I thought there was one really interesting event that I want to talk about, and that's the final clean and jerk worm clean and jerk event. Y'all decided to go touch and go. Why did you do that, and what did you learn from that?
I mean, look, we were warming up to do the clean and jerks. We didn't have a lot on the line in the last workout, and the bottom line was like, there's a team that really killed the score that we practiced doing touch and go reps. And they're going to go through the CrossFit Games. So can we do this and match the intensity that they put forth and beat their time without ever doing it before. And like, I think it was Brendan and I that kind of talked about it before. Like, do you think, like, cause we were just worried, we worried how the women would react. Mm-hmm. Like, no way. Like, this is going to be a bad workout. Like, we know already how it feels. Like, it's going to be nasty. Like, and so we chatted about it, and then we just got the team together and we're like, hey, let's do touch and go. And they're like, touch and go? Like, yeah. So watch this real quick. And we pulled up the phone of the heat that was going, or the heat that had went. And they were like, oh man, I don't know. Do you think we could do it? And I was like, yeah, we could do it. Why not? Like, if it don't work, what do? We start doing singles. We finish. Like, it's all good. And like, okay, all right. So we just got together and we tried to ghost some reps, how it would go. I mean, we hadn't even worked on regripping the bags, right? Yeah. So we didn't even know, like, just how it was going to feel in our hands or anything. And we just went for it. And immediately that told me that everybody was all in. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very easy to go out and worry what people would think. Like, oh, what if we don't get top five on this workout? Or what if we don't win it like we should? Or like, what if, who cares? Right? You need to go out and we need to learn something. It almost turned into training, right? Mm-hmm. Versus competing in that situation because of the fact that we had done so well throughout the weekend. And I was already thinking about August at that point. Like, there's going to come a time where we're not going to know very long before a workout. We need to make the decision. Like, what are we going to do? What are we capable of doing? And they were all in. So it was like, I think it really showed me that we actually have a chance to go and compete to win this thing.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Just that decision.
What type of training since regionals do you think has had the biggest effect on your team overall? Individual, team workouts, odd object things. Maybe it's spending time together outside of the gym. I guess not type of training, but what facet of the overall training, et cetera, has played the biggest role?
For us, I think it's just time together, man, because I think that because of our experiences as individual athletes, like, we all really respect each other. And I think that watching your peer that you know is a talented individual, right? Like, some of the people that are training on our team are and have the experience that they have, go forward and suffer with you. It's just like, it goes back to the old school classroom mentality of a CrossFit gym. You know what I mean? Like, you're in there suffering with your peers. You start to admire these people. You start to respect them because of what they're willing to do in order to progress. And I think that not just that hard work, but also the willingness to put other people first. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And as the leader, or especially as a lot of the rep counter on a lot of warm workouts, for me, it has helped me really admire everyone on the workouts, because the first thing that I try to look to dictate our pace is body language and like what people are going through and how they look and how they're responding. And it's like, I can see and just watch people start to fall to pieces. And they're trying as hard as they can to hold it together. And it's like they're just grinding. And I think that us knowing and understanding that and seeing that, and also the way that we sacrifice for each other. I think that everyone has, like I mentioned before, like, we're at this time in our life where, you know, Tiff's getting ready to be involved in real estate, and she's taking these tests. Michaela's a mom of three. Mandy and Brendan are both trying to make this coaching career more of a professional pursuit. Mitch is still involved in school, and it's like, everyone finds time to get together several hours a day or several hours a week. And it's like, just knowing that about each other, like, okay, yeah, that, you know, this is costing them something to be here with me, has created that love and bond for each other. I think that is really made some of the biggest impact.
So you've been here before, you've won the games twice on a team. What are the conversations now about, like, there's a difference between the games and regionals. What do you guys have to focus on and execute on in between now and the games in order to prepare yourself to win the thing?
Trust is the biggest thing that I think we've had to focus on. I think that it's knowing, and not just trusting each other, it's trusting yourself. You know, I think that everyone's going to get called upon in the games at some point to carry the load. Like, there's going to be an event for everybody, at least. And there's going to be an event where people are going to fail. And I think they have to have that undying trust for each other. So it goes way beyond capacity. It goes way beyond communication. Because I think we've proved to each other that we're okay at those things. Mm-hmm. But it's like, in the fleeting moments of a workout, when there's only reps remaining, and some of these 3 to 5 last reps are going to decide whether we take 5th or 7th on a workout, like, how are you going to respond? Are you going to try to rush it because you don't trust me? Or are you going to try to, you know, do an extra rep because you don't trust that I will handle my end? Or are you just going to stay to the game plan and just execute? And I think that's one of the biggest things, is the trust. Execution is clearly big. But that happens in practice every day. You know, we formulate a game plan. We do our best to stick to it. But, yeah, at this point, I mean, I had a pretty I mean, I don't usually fire the team up too much, but I tried to express to them how much I believe in them, mm-hmm. you know? And I wanted them to just leave all the doubts behind. You know, we were about to start a workout. Nick had us do DT with the worm the other day, and it was brutal, right? We set the tone to come out with big sets, which isn't necessarily what I would do if we were at the games in regards to take the best place on the stage that we could. But, like, that was a part of the game plan that day. And it was blowing people up, and we were suffering, and we were struggling. So before we went out to that workout, though, knowing the intent, it was like, look, leave all the doubts that you got right here on this end of the field. When we sprint 100 yards to pick the worm up, like, this is, we're a different team now. And we are now setting steps forward to win the CrossFit Games, and that's it. And that's our expectation. And we do that by doing one workout at a time to the best of our abilities. And we let the rest handle itself.
Love it, man.
Yeah.
So I want to transition a little bit into you as a coach now.
Sure. Yeah.
But before that, you've had the chance to coach hundreds, even thousands of athletes through, you know, teaching the L1s, coaching classes at different gyms, as well as Brood athletes. Out of all of that coaching experience, what do you think has lent itself the most to helping you lead this team?
That's a hard question. You know, in coaching, I'll say this first, is that I learn something every day, for sure. And I think the lesson that I've learned the biggest, and I can say this specifically as Brute has matured as a company, that everyone is very different from me. And that is not something that it was easily learned for me. As an athlete myself, like growing up, like things were really simple in my mind. Like it was like, oh, I want to go to the CrossFit Games. Got it. I'm going to live like I need to live. I'm going to train like I need to train. I'll just line everything up to make it to the CrossFit Games. I want to get a football scholarship. Cool. What'd that look like for me in high school? Didn't party much. Didn't drink at all. Didn't smoke. Like surrounded myself with people that I knew had put themselves in situations that were either going to lead to where I wanted to be or could help support me to get me there. And not everyone's that way. And for some reason in my own mind, I was kind of blown away at that. Like I was like, these athletes, they're telling me one thing and then they're not living and I just don't understand. Like I'm confused. And it was a real struggle for me. And I have this, and my wife can attest to this, I can be impatient sometimes with people. And it's like when someone messages me or they're expressing to me like, hey coach, you know, I feel like I've hit a plateau in CrossFit and I don't know why. And it's like, okay, so, you know, how's your nutrition look? Like, what are you doing? Why's your sleep? And then, you know, they're telling me like, ah, it's not good. Like, I kind of eat what I eat and I kind of, you know, they're getting blown by the wind in any direction. And I'm just like, I can't say what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I can't say what I'm thinking right off the cusp. And that leads to actually how I have to manage this team. Like, and from a leadership perspective, I can't always just like snap back with what I'm thinking when someone brings something to me, because then what's that look like? I'm insensitive. I'm not considering their feelings, right? I'm not putting them first before I actually respond. And then what's going to happen when they're feeling that way the next time, right? They're not going to come to me. Right. And then it's just this reservation of negative energy or these feelings, and they need help, but they're not expressing it. Maybe they're expressing it to other people, but they don't want to. They're like, man, Adrian's tripping. I can't say nothing to him because he trips out on me. He just tells me I need to suck it up, mm-hmm. you know, or he just tells me I need to be better. And like, neither of those are good coaching cues.
Right.
Right. So how communication wise with my teammates, is that acceptable? So that's been extremely humbling for me. And I hope that I've gotten better at it over time. And it's kind of a running joke in our team. Like they get the death stare, like, cause somebody will say something. Like, I don't even got time if we're on the worm to like say anything, but I'll just like snap this like terrible look at them. Brennan probably got a couple stories about that, but I'm trying to be better at that. And I think that's the most valuable lesson that I've learned, is that like, even though I may think or may feel a certain way in regards to the sport of CrossFit, or even it's a sport for everybody, but as a lifestyle, showing more empathy to people, and that starts with just understanding where they're coming from first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just like any relationship in general, right? We have, like, I have my own, you know, purpose and my own motives for doing everything. And something might come extremely easy to me because I have such a strong sense of purpose over that one domain in my life.
Yep.
And someone else just might not have that same thing, or the same habits,
right,
or the same upbringing. And so it is incredibly important to understand where people are coming from and why they're saying the things that they're saying.
Yep.
what else has evolved over the last couple of years? You've worked with thousands of people online, taught dozens of seminars, coached hundreds of classes. What else has evolved in that time?
Personally?
Or personally, like as a coach, what has changed?
Man, several things. Clearly, when you're learning every day, you probably change a lot if you're actually putting it into practice. But, you know, I think that just in my day-to-day, it is, again, like, I don't even know if this is the right word, but I guess the amount of grace that I try to put into practice with how I lead people in general, right? It's like me, whether it's we're in a coach's meeting and we're going over common faults and trying to progress in the way that we communicate with people, me being able to communicate that and lead these other coaches who are going to be leading in a non, I guess, conflicting way. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of it is just based on communication and the way that I use my words and my body language and not trying to seem demeaning by any way, but also trying to get a clear point across to people. In the fitness industry in general, like, with what I'm seeing and the way that it affects me is that, like, people are becoming more hungry for knowledge, right? But the downside is that they don't always want what they're asking for. You know what I'm saying?
Like, can you give me an example?
Yeah, like nutrition questions and even fitness questions about, hey, coach, what should I do? What should I do? You know, I really want to get to the CrossFit Games. What should I do? And when I tell them those things, or I share with them or ask them about their lifestyle first and then maybe talk about some common practices that need to go in line or some things that need to line up for them to have success, they might say that they want those things and then those actions don't align with what they're saying.
Right.
And so I think, you know, I see that more and more because people are hearing about what health is and what fitness is and what it looks like. And then they're like, cool, like I'm, and there's a lot of people that have, will align those things and they listen well and they're teachable and they're receptive. But there's just a majority where it's like, for me, you know, and I was very guilty of this, and I can still get running at the mouth. And people ask me about nutrition, and we'll talk for 30 minutes about nutrition. And then I ask them 2.5 or 3 weeks later about what they're doing to change their nutrition, and nothing's changed. And that was 30 minutes of my life and their life that we could have both saved each other. You know what I'm saying? So I think that one of the biggest things that I noticed is that the hunger's there for more, and I need to do a better job, or we as leaders in the community need to do a better job of applying people with the ability to actually execute this advice and these teachings that we're putting into practice. Because I just noticed that there's a gap there, and I think that the gap's kind of growing because we got these people that are curious, but then how do they actually apply it to their life is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Really hard. We're all on the go. We can't plan. We don't know how to do these things. We don't know how to make, you know, a list. People don't like to make lists, and as you know, like that's one of the keys to having a successful day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's one of the things that stand out to me.
Yeah, I love what you touched on about people's actions lining up with their goals. This is something that a D talks about all the time, right? People, they say they want a six pack or they want to look like, you know, some athlete on Instagram, but they're not willing to put in the amount of consistency and accuracy that it takes to reach that goal. And so it's just a recipe for unhappiness and so dissatisfaction and you not reaching your goal. Right. So it's really important to make sure you can really just set it up the opposite way where you look at how much am I willing to sacrifice? How consistent am I willing to be? Accurate am I willing to be? And then you can say, okay, with that level of compliance and accuracy, you can expect this kind of result rather than saying, oh, I want that result. That's the only way I'm going to be happy. But you're not that committed, right?
Yep.
So you're working with hundreds of people on a one-on-one basis, at Brute.
Yep.
What characteristics do people have that get the most out of the coach-athlete relationship? How are they communicating with you? What are they putting on the line? That kind of thing.
Yeah, great question. So through the check-in process, I noticed the most success with athletes that are curious, right? And curiosity, I know, is like this characteristic that I mean, most humans innately have a bit of it, but these people are so passionate about the direction that they want to go that they consistently are asking questions. Like, and the questions can't always come from the coach's end, because I don't know what questions I can answer for you if you're not asking them, right? So it's like, hey, coach, you know, I got this problem with eating consistently. And I'm no nutrition coach, but clearly a lot of the issues that athletes have is with fueling. And it's like, you know, I noticed that I just don't get in enough carbs each day. This is what my prescription is. And what do you think I should do? And it's just like me opening up a conversation like, okay, so what kind of carbohydrates are you eating throughout the day? And it's like, well, I'm trying to stick pretty clean. I'm trying to do this paleo thing. And I feel like that's probably the healthiest way for me to eat. And I'm like, all right. Well, again, like, what kind of goals do you have in regards to this training program? And they're like, well, I'd like to be at regionals next year. And I'm like, okay, so my first piece of advice is that we really need to get you fueling so that you're meeting your macronutrient content in order to provide you with the energy to recover and do these things. And we talk about dense carbohydrates. We talk about, like, where they can find that and apply it. And then later that same conversation might take more turns in regards to, you know, I know you asked me about my goals and – to be honest, my sleep's not that good. What do you do before you go to bed? And so the point that I'm trying to make is that, like, usually 1 to 2 questions per check-in that I get lead to these emails that are constantly linked together that go for 10 weeks. And it's consistent interaction between me and the athlete. So their accountability and training is higher. And then all of a sudden their nutrition tightens up because they know that I will ask them, like, so how you doing on those carbs? I know you listed 8 out of 10 on nutrition this week, but, like, are you eating more sweet potatoes? Mm-hmm. Are you adding in some rice? What decision did you make? Or you talked about the sleep. Did you work on getting any melatonin, or did you start that? Or maybe running a fan at night in your bedroom? Did you get those blackout curtains? And so, and then they're most of the time pretty transparent. Like, nah, I haven't done that yet, to be honest. But I do feel like I'm sleeping better. I'm like, okay, what do you think's changed then? And then at least they got to go back and digress to what has made the difference, if there really was one. So I think the biggest thing is curiosity, that they just, it spurs them along to keep asking questions, man.
So those two examples, neither one of them had anything to do with their actual training. Do you find right. that the people that try to uncover all of those other areas of their, you know, overall training plan are more successful, or was that just an arbitrary example?
Yes, that was an example, but it's 100% fact, right? Mm-hmm. The people that are taking care of the things outside of the gym are the people with the most success within their training. I think that, and I would like to think that we do a great job of laying out the training protocol. So there's not a ton of questions in regards to the training of, like, oh, you know, hey, coach, I was curious about this drill. There might be some whys, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, why do we do this? And I explain it to them. But for the most part, it's literally the issues that surround their training that are causing athletes the most trouble. And so if they do a great job of making those things priority, their sleep, their nutrition, their recovery, their stress level outside of the gym, then they're going to have more success in the gym. So I think it's inevitable that, yeah, those that have the most success are the most curious about how to tie all the aspects of their lifestyle together.
So our program is a very strict program in relation to other programs. Yep. With the gymnastics progression, all the extra endurance work. What are the characteristics of people that succeed most on a program like ours? Of all the ones that you see in Brute, which ones are doing the best and why?
The consistent athletes, 100%. So I would argue that even on an athlete with less motivation, an athlete that is struggling with their nutrition, an athlete that's struggling to get the most sleep, that consistently follows each tier of the program, get better results than the person that feels like they're 100% committed but can only make it to the gym 3 days a week, right? So and even this goes the same for athletes that, like, hey, I'm pigeonholed this week at work. I only hit 2 days, so I'm going to squeeze 2 days as a double day, and I'm going to do this. And then all of a sudden, these guys are in a hole, mm-hmm. right? They can't recover. They're digging themselves out. Their performance is lackluster the day to follow because they're not used to the double day if they're a compete athlete. And so I think that it's, you know, consistency first and foremost. And to back that up, what allows them to be consistent is that, and again, I get back to talking about things outside the gym, but these athletes are willing to structure the rest of their day around what they need to do mm-hmm. in the gym.
What do you, when you have someone with a very you know, huge goal and you realize that their actions are not lining up with that, how does that conversation go where you explain to them what it actually takes?
Yeah. So I've learned to try to explain less and ask more. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like, look, to be honest with you, I'm noticing that you're not training the same way that you listed 3 months ago that you wanted to train in order to be the regionals athlete that you are. Is there something going on that's causing that? And that might be where we start. And then they might be like, oh yeah, I'm just really busy at work right now. And it's hard to get into the gym to train. And I'm like, cool. Are you still seeing PRs? Are you getting progress in your training? They'll be like, nah, not so much. And I'd be like, all right, you know, the open's approaching. We're only about a month and a half out. What do you think needs to change in the meantime in order to meet those results? And they're like, I don't know if I can change much. Because work, right? Like, what can you change? And so then it leads me down another conversation where we're like, okay, so if we can't really change much and we're probably not where we're at or going to be in a month and a half, what do you think those goals could maybe shift towards, something that is relatable and actually achievable for us this season then? That way we're actually working towards something over the long term versus just shooting in the dark for the short-term mm-hmm. goal that you thought might be achievable. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it goes the same even with athletes when they get injured or hurt, or it's not like the game's over for you, but maybe 2018 looks a little different than we anticipated because that's life.
Right. How do you know when someone is just, they really, really want something and they're just being lazy and they don't know, they just don't have the right habits to reach their goal yet, versus this is just not the right goal for them, and they might have that goal because they think it's cool or somebody else wants them to do it? Like, how do you discern between the two?
That's really hard to do. I am the last person to crush someone's dreams, right? Like, I want people, I mean, ever since I was a kid, I was like, I'm gonna play in the NFL or the NBA, whichever pans out, but I'm gonna play in one of them. And so I understand to shoot for the moon, land on the stars. But there's a point where the rubber meets the road, right? Like, when it comes to testing, the stuff that we do to break down an athlete, usually I can get a really good baseline of where they're at and where they could potentially go in a window of time, right? Let's say that someone's running a 7-minute mile and their overhead squat is 205 and they're 28 years old and they say they want to go to the CrossFit Games as an individual athlete. Mm-hmm. There's some serious conversations that we have to have at that point, right? Because of the window of opportunity. Like, maybe it could happen at 35. We got a 7-year window. It could mm-hmm. happen, right? And this goes both with work ethic and potential, but that athlete we would have to do some amazing things with in order to close that gap. So, again, that's a conversation that I have in order to just – let's make these goals smaller along the way and focus on one thing at a time. If you make it to the CrossFit Games one day, hey, I'll be there to coach you right. Straight up. I'll be in the back. But let's go ahead and digress to make these goals smaller. So that's one way. For the other athlete that, like, might just be lazy, that's not – let's say we get a 22-year-old – and they're really close to some of these achievable numbers that we're already watching athletes achieve at regionals. You know, they got the 330 clean and jerk. They got the, you know, maybe it's not the 5-minute mile, but they're running a 6:18 mile. And they say they're hungry, but their accountability tells me something else. Those athletes, I tend to show less mercy to all the time. And I think it's because when I see someone with potential that talks a good game and doesn't back up their words, there's nothing else that lights my fire more than that, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's people out there that would kill for this genetic potential that this individual has. And so it's either my job now to find a way to spark that or to help them understand that they're just blowing smoke up their own butt, right? Like, they want to pretend that they've got what it takes. But the fact is that the people they're watching at the CrossFit Games floor is much more driven, accountable, disciplined than they're showing me. And so I don't hesitate in order to say that to those athletes, because sure. I think that a lot of those people with the talent that are lazy have had their butt kissed mm-hmm. their whole life. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They were like the talented guy on the football team. They were the talented baseball player that didn't need all the reps that everybody else needed. And so no one ever told them, like, you're going to need to suffer a little bit to be where you want to be. And this is just how it goes.
Right.
So I think you got to deal with those two people very differently, and spotting that sometimes is really hard, man.
Right. I've found by giving them the two options, right, you can continue to behave the way you are and taking the actions you are, and you can get this result, or you can completely shift your goal and just do everything that you're capable of and follow the process. And by letting them choose, they immediately have more accountability.
True.
Right.
Yep.
And it just kind of puts that in their face.
Yeah.
But I've seen a lot of our athletes, like very, very talented athletes, huge potential. And then we give them those options and they actually choose, they decide, you know what, this really doesn't matter that much to me. And they end up being a lot happier because right. they're not chasing this goal that doesn't line up with what they're willing to do.
Yep. I agree.
Well, all right, man, that's all I got for today. What, cool. Where can people keep up with you online and get in touch with you?
They can follow our team at Wasatch Brutes. And then personally, Adrian_Conway on Instagram. I don't do the Twitter thing. So Adrian Conway on Facebook, they can add me to be there. Yeah, man, I'll start posting more content in regards to coaching after the season concludes though. So if they need information on training, ways to apply it to their life, clearly I'm going to be a little busy the next 2 weeks, but after that, we'll get the ball rolling.
Hell yeah, brother. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you.